Welcome to the Property Nomads podcast. First of all, happy new year for Feliz Año Nuevo. No matter what language, we've got it here covered on the Property Nomads podcast. Happy new year to you all. And we kickstart this year with a getting started in property mini series. A massive thank you to everyone that emailed in saying, "Oh, Rob, I want to be on the show." It was difficult to pick three, to be perfectly honest, but delighted with today's guest. It's Chris Evans. Not the radio DJ and the car enthusiast, a completely different Chris Evans, just the same name. And Chris has got some awesome tips and hints, tips and tricks when it comes to buy-to-let investing as well. So we're going to deep dive into Chris's story, where he was, where he is now, what he does, how he balances property with everyday life. And again, that is the purpose of this property mini-series, getting started in property. Just, you know, awesome to share the successes of others and to show to you as well that property could be done in many, many ways. So, Chris, all of that being said, thank you for taking the time out to record this and welcome to the Property Nomads podcast.
Hi, Rob, and happy new year, everyone.
Now, Chris, you're an avid listener to the show and, you know, thank you for that as well. Your company work as a solicitor working in child protection services. You're happily married to Anya. You're both, if you sure don't mind me saying, in your 40s, and you've got a lot of great information to share today. But going back to the start, what got you started in property in the first place?
Well, we were accidental landlords in that when Anya and I got together back in 2003, we both had properties, and I sold mine, and Anya kept hers, and we bought another property together. So effectively, Anya was an accidental landlord, and we were really, I think, frustrated about the amount of interest that you know, we were getting on our savings, and we wanted to sort of get into property, partly to give it a go. I suppose watching Martin Roberts on Home Under the Hammer, which is probably how a lot of people have now got started into property. So we were accidental landlords. We did some property training in 2016. Unfortunately, Brexit happened, so we kind of lost our motivation, I would say. But then we did some more training towards the sort of end of 2017. I think we were energized by what was going on in Hull at the time, because Hull was city of culture, and there was a lot of positive energy in the city, and we just thought it was really the right time to invest. So we started, I would say we started looking at property again sort of April time 2017, and we got our first property towards October 17.
Awesome stuff. So it's fair to say that, and again it's similar here, in terms of quite a slow start in terms of getting the first one or two over the line, but now you've done them, then that's given you a, pardon the pun, a good building block to move forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. I think part of it is confidence, but also we viewed a lot of property and put quite a few offers in, but we were just, you know, not getting accepted. And actually, the way we got our first property, it was an off-market deal. But we put an offer in on a property in Hull that was effectively quite run down, and it was clearly a commercial sale, a repossession, and we took the builder around to see it, and I didn't know that there was an issue with subsidence, and he said, if you look at the windows, you can see that it's slanting, and he said, but don't worry about that. If I were you, I wouldn't look at this property, but there's one that I know probably about a mile away. Come and have a look at it. And we went to have a look at it. Quite a big garden, but really overgrown. and just an unloved property. It turned out that the owner knew Anya, and we managed to have an off-market deal. And we bought that, I would say we bought that for 67, and it was revalued last year at 105. So that was more or less money in, money out.
Awesome. That's it's great to hear about what I call a golden egg, because, you know, whether people have got themselves, you know, educated in, you know, property training by doing that or listening to podcasts or reading books, you kind of always hear, you know, this sort of golden goose of property, isn't it? Is can you get all your money out at the end of the deal? And on buy-to-lets, oh, so that's the other thing to point out, is your strategy is buy-to-let. On buy-to-lets, it is not impossible, as you've just proven, but it can be quite challenging to do that in nowadays. So that must have felt fantastic, getting that valuation. How did that come about? Was that a lot of due diligence? How did you go about to make sure that you got the best valuation as possible for yourself?
Well, we did actually put together a pack. Obviously, before we bought, we looked at the right move values for sale values down the road, and they were probably in the region of about 90, but it was a corner plot. When we got the valuation, we put together a before and after photographs and a sort of full dossier, and we were fortunate that when we're going to do the valuation, we got to meet the valuer and we gave this to them. And he said, I very rarely get that. And I think because it was an off-market deal, it's a lot easier, I think, to get below market value off-market. And certainly, I think we fell on our feet with that one. There was a little bit of luck involved. The other interesting thing about that property is some other property investors that we know came around to have a look at the property, and they said we were just going to skip these old doors, and they said if I were you, put them online, you might get 20 quid or a tenner for these doors. Somebody came around, and at the same time I'd organized our builder to come round, and I mistook him for our builder, and he happened to be a manager of one of the big property companies that work with Hull City Council. Our builder hadn't come round by this stage, but wasn't, and equally wasn't able to do it within the time period. And that's how we got our builders who we've worked with since. And they work with us. So, yeah. So it's funny, just by some bits of luck, you can get people on your power team. So we weren't expecting that, and it's turned out really, really good for us.
That's great. I love how that works. And it's important to point out that this is one of the joys of property, isn't it? That things can work in mysterious ways sometimes. And I think your story there is just, you know, put the proof in the pudding, if that's the right term or phrase.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose after getting that one, we were energised. We got another property, which was probably more or less done up, I would say. A little bit of work on it. And we got that property. The idea with that one was it was near the hospital. We were thinking about doing a sort of hospital HMO. It was going to be sold with vacant possession. But when we visited the property, there was tenants in, and they seemed like a lovely couple. When it turned to it, they didn't actually want to leave, and it was clear that it would cash flow with them in. So we actually decided not to have it with vacant possession and have the tenants in. They'd been there for 7 years, so we kept them on, and we've got that other plan of possibly a hospital HMO if forever they were going to decide not to stay at the property or give notice. We've got that potential option there.
always keeping your options open is incredibly useful. So that's a couple of properties that you've mentioned there. So you're going down the buy-to-let route. I mean, how have you found, in terms of like possibly raising joint venture finance, in terms of dealing with, you know, mortgage lenders, your power team, brokers, how have you found that process? Because some people, that can be quite laborious and boring, and you know, banks are always changing the rules at the last minute. How have yourselves dealt with stuff like that?
I suppose, we haven't actually gone down the route of joint ventures yet, and we haven't even relied on angel finance. I think we've been lucky in that we've just managed to get enough money out to effectively do the next one. In terms of finance, we haven't had too many problems about, we do use the same broker, and he's got us some good deals. We tend not to refinance after 6 months. I know a lot of people do that, but we've got initially on a deal, usually for a fixed deal of 2 years, and then we've refinanced after 2 years. We're not, I suppose we both don't have the time to be doing 3 or 4 properties a year. So we've done on average 1 or 2 a year. So that's the way that we've done it. And we've found that we've actually got more money out by leaving it 2 years, because property values have increased. So that's how we've dealt with that. I mean, I suppose once you've got tenants in, there's always the risk that there might be damage to the property, and the property might not be in the state that it was. But we've done the due diligence with the tenants at the front end, and we feel that we've got some really good tenants that are looking after our properties. We've not had many issues. And we decided, or took the conscious decision, to, rather than having a letting agent, to manage ourselves. Mm-hmm. That I think has worked well for us.
In terms of, again, just going back to strategy, so I've just got this clear in my head. So in terms of the properties that you've purchased so far, are you saying that you've purchased cash, left them for a couple of years and then refinanced, or you've purchased with like a 2-year mortgage, left them 2 years and then refinanced? How have you gone about doing that, Chris?
What we've done is we've purchased them with a 2-year mortgage and then refinance them after the 2 years rather than after 6 months. So they've all been on 75% mortgages, with the aim of obviously buying below at market value, refurbing and increasing the value, so that at the time that we decide to remortgage, hopefully we get most of our money out.
For people listening to this, people might be thinking, well, you know, why would you buy on a mortgage and then add to sort of that with, what I'm trying to say is, so you buy with a mortgage, so obviously you're paying your deposit, et cetera, et cetera. And then if you're doing work, you're then sinking quite a lot of money into each property. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's how Aaron and I actually do it, to be fair, Chris. So I'm not sounding like I'm being critical. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Why did you decide to go down that route and not just go out, right, raise finance, buy cash, add value, and then refinance out in 6 months? Would that not have worked for yourself and your circumstances? Or do you just prefer doing it this way because this is how you want to do it, because it's your property business?
I think we were lucky because, as I say, we were accidental landlords. We managed to get a good chunk of money out of Anya's house. So we did have a good bit of money to pay for builders, pay for the works, etc., on our first property. But we have been using credit cards effectively on 0% and changing the balance. That's been working well for us. We haven't felt the need at this stage that we needed angels or joint ventures. So I think we've been fortunate there. and we've been managing to get more or less 90% out. The first one I would say was probably 95. We've just had another revaluation where we purchased again a property that was a commercial sale. You can tell that by the stickers. I don't know if anybody knows about the stickers, but if you have stickers on the taps or stickers on the boiler that say do not use, that's a good sign that it's probably a bank sale.
Mm-hmm. Good information. That's good to be aware of that. So how does that work in comparable to sort of a regular sale? What sort of steps have you got to take? Are there any differences there?
The differences in terms of purchasing is if and when you put an offer, you're always, until you've actually exchanged, you're always in the situation, is someone going to gazump you? But with a commercial sale, you've got the opportunity to get property quite a way below market value. We've been lucky in that sense.
That's good to hear. And there is always an element of luck in whatever we do, and you've got to put the hard work in, which of course it sounds like you two definitely do that. In terms of goals, what goals do you both have? What does the future look like for both of you and your property portfolio?
Yeah, our goals, we both work full time. We literally don't have the time to be getting three or four properties a year. And we like to actually put our stamp on it. We like to do some of the work to save some of the cost in terms of refurb, annual lays floors. I'm getting a dab hand at painting, excuse the pun. Effectively our goal at the moment is to just keep adding one or two buy-to-lets. We were originally looking at doing an HMO strategy, but I think we've started to feel that probably isn't a strategy for us in terms of the time and managing of HMOs. I think in our particular area, it's quite saturated. Obviously, with buy-to-let, you've got a massive market. With HMO, I think less so, and it's more location-specific. In that there are, you've got to buy in the right area. You've got to check out the demand. It's more important with an HMO, I would feel, that you're absolutely spot on that there is a demand for shared housing. And then you've got the licensing as well. Our strategy moving forward is probably, we're really interested in doing social housing. We're also interested in doing holiday lets. I know, I suppose, from my position at work, there is a demand for social housing, whether it be, bail hostels, children's homes, that kind of thing, or just if the council require more property to actually let out as council lets. So that is where we're looking to go forward in terms of our strategy.
What I'm taking away from this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the approach that you and Anya have is incredibly slow and steady, taking a lot of care into what you're doing and being consistent. So a couple of properties a year, maybe do that for the next 10 years or so, whilst tentatively exploring different options within your local area. Is that a fair assumption I've just made?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a fair assumption. I think when I first started training, I was wanting to go and do this a little bit more speed. But I do think the income that we've now got provides a little bit more of a safety net. I think I really enjoy my job, and I don't want to give it up. At the time that I started the journey, I was probably working very, very long hours. I think there was a bit of a switch in my head when we were doing some property training, and there was this game, I think it's called Cash Flow, and it was making me think, oh, I'm going to be on the treadmill for the rest of my life. I'm going to be working 70 hours a week. But what I've managed to do is take back a little bit more control from being in, I was in private practice at that stage. I'm now in-house, still a demanding job, but I've managed to take control of where I'm at. And we enjoy doing the property, but it's really more of a pension pot rather than saying, yes, I want to be have a net worth of so many million at the end of it. So it's really, as you say, it's a slow and steady strategy, and it's not a sort of strategy where we're looking to be financially free straight away. We're not far away, to be fair. I think if we had 3 or 4 more properties, we would be financially free.
That's great to hear. And the important aspect to take away from this, and again, for people listening, looking to get started in property, is, I go back and I said this time and time again, is there's no right or wrong in property. As long as you do everything under what I call this ethical umbrella, so as in you abide by the law, you're not doing shady stuff, etc., etc., there's no right or wrong way to do property. So Chris, I love the fact that you and Anya are doing 1 or 2 a year, you're taking it easy, you're both in, enjoying your work, you're in no rush. That's great. I think that's admirable. I think that's fantastic. If people want to go out and I just after one of the episodes recently spoke to a guy that wants to get 1,000 properties, for example, Ryan Luke. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. That works for him. I love how this works for you. And the thing I take from this is that you, although Anya's not on the call or on the sort of podcast now, is that you sound incredibly content with what you're doing, and you sound very happy to be doing it. And there's a beauty to that, isn't there?
Yeah. Equally, you've got to be happy with your strategy. As you say, there's just no right or wrongs. The other thing is you've got to review your strategy. We've just actually, this isn't an investing strategy, so I'm not recommending this, but we've recently got a dog, and we bought a static on in Bridlington. All we're concerned about on that is we're not going to make a lot of money out of it. In fact, we just want the site fees, but it's probably going to give us an idea about how to use booking.com. And it will probably maybe a stepping stone to possibly doing some serviced accommodation in holiday locations. Because that's something that we'd quite like to do, is serviced accommodation, holiday lets as well.
That's wonderful. And again, it's all fascinating to hear. And this is the whole point of this series, is, I suppose it's a common misconception from a lot of people, isn't it? It costs a lot of money to get into property, or, I want to get all my money out, or, all of the people basically come up with excuses, don't know, of why they shouldn't get started. But I love the fact you have got started, and you're sticking to your own rules, your own way of doing things. And again, you sound, incredibly happy to be doing that, because you've got that focus.
Yeah, and I think the danger is that you can sort of absorb a lot of information in relation to property and think, am I doing enough? I've only got 1 or 2 properties a year. I've not got 5. I'm not killing it. At the end of the day, it's about what's right for you. We feel pretty content now. We're only sort of halfway on a journey, if that. But we feel pretty content about what we're doing. We just don't have the time to do any more than 1 or 2 properties. We also like putting our stamp on it. We like self-managing. I think that's partly down to, as accidental landlords, having a bad experience with a letting agent, and having problem tenants, and having to get them out, etc. So we like to have that control over how we let the property and who we let it to. But we also like to put our own stamp on it. We enjoy the actual ripping out of stuff. We enjoy painting. We enjoy the laying the floors and that kind of stuff. That's really why we're doing what we're doing.
If you had to give top tips for people, let's just say three top tips for people wanting to start out, what top tips would you give people?
But obviously you make your money when you buy. I think the other thing is diligence on tenants. When we're looking at people's finances and about when we're accepting tenants, it doesn't matter to us whether they're on benefits or, as long as we can see that they can financially afford it. But we just like to take a view on people that come and see. And if we can work with them and they look people that you're going to get on with, that seems to work for us in terms of the due diligence. It's not always about the bottom line. Equally, if you are starting out in property, make sure you do all the right things in terms of when you set the tenancy up. Particularly, we use all the NRLA documents. In fact, being a lawyer, I checked the tenancy agreement, and I have to say it's probably one of the best tenancy agreements I've seen. I don't think you could instruct a lawyer in London, and they couldn't do a better job. So join the NRLA, use their documents, use their templates, make sure gas certificates, electricity certificates, you have all of those when you're letting the tenants in, because it becomes really hard to get them out if you haven't got the rent, was it the buy-to-rent booklet, the gas certificate, the deposit protection scheme. Make sure you do all of that when you set the tenancy up, because it just makes your life easier, and it's due diligence at the front end. So I suppose that's my tip.
Awesome. I think that's a great place to finish that off. To be perfectly honest with you, Chris, I think you've come in, you've given people information about yourself, your background, your story, where you are, what you've done, and some great top tips there, especially if people look to go down the self-managing route. And again, it's important to point out, as you've said multiple times through this episode already, is that there is no right or wrong way to do it. If you want to manage your own properties, feel free to do so. But if you're going to do it, do a very good job of it. And the NRLA are fantastic to give you support. If you want to use lettings agents, feel free. Again, do your homework on them. And do what works for you at the end of the day. So I really appreciate the information that you've given and the fact that you shared your story, Chris. So Chris, the final question, just before we wrap up, is what's the biggest challenge that you've overcome to date in your property journey?
I think the pandemic has been really difficult, because I don't know if you've experienced this in terms of builders have been incredibly busy because of the first lockdown period. When we came out of that lockdown period, trying to get hold of your builders was really difficult. And we did have the conversations with them, but they had numerous clients to service. So that's been a challenge. Also plaster. I don't know if anyone else has had this problem. There's been a plaster deficit. So we had to have a rethink about how we were going to do our latest refurb.
For any obstacle that pops in our way, there's always a way around it or a way straight through it. So on that note, Chris, it's been awesome. A really massive thank you for your time, and best of luck moving forward with your next purchases.
Thank you, Rob. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.